You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
You're listening to Creative Quarantine. I'm your host, Angelique Roche, and I'm going to keep this short and sweet because today was just a good conversation with a multi-hyphenate, amazingly brilliant artist, professor, producer, PhD-having, game loving, good wine appreciating, just amazing human being, aka one of my favorite rappers, Samus. So, you know what? We'll get it quick, straight to the point. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did.
Sorry, I'm a big, huge Animaniacs fan. Hi, everybody. Happy Friday. This is episode, show, convo, however you want to call it. 25 of Creative Quarantine, and I'm here with the amazing, just beautifully talented soul, Samus. What is up? How are you?
Hi, I'm great. I'm great in part because seeing your wonderful face, I mean, you're like slaying in quarantine, I have to say. Like, it's not always, I'm on a lot of Zoom calls, you know, I've seen, we all have run the gamut. I think at the beginning of quarantine, there was still kind of, you know, folks were trying to keep it fresh. Now that we've hit days like 41, 42, things have started to shift. But I feel like you really got it together. I'm inspired. I'm inspired to do better. I teach on Mondays, and this Monday, I'm really going to like dress it up, do my winged liner, like get my lip together, like just, you know, spice it up a little bit. So thank you for that.
You know what? If the secret is one, no one has to see under here.
True story.
There are no shoes. Let's be real. So that's my sacrifice. And two, actually seltzer water in my hair. That's what keeps it. Yeah.
Really?
Someone has asked me that. So my sister, brilliant woman that she is, wow. Doctor, scientist. Y'all know how y'all roll. My sister was like, pH balance of hair. And she's like, use seltzer water.
These are the keys. Like, these are major keys. I will be tweeting that out after this conversation because
it changed my life.
This is, yeah, game. Your hair looks fabulous. It looks so lustrous and defined.
Seltzer water and main choice.
Wow. I've learned so much in like 3 minutes. This is incredible.
Oh, man. See, this is why I'm happy we did a Friday conversation. So for those, before I forget, for those at home who are watching in, you have a lot of fans that I'm sure are watching, so they know who you are. But for folks who may not be as familiar with your work, can you lay out the hyphens? Can you lay out the words that reside between the hyphens? I think, yeah, that's it.
I can try to. Okay, so let's see. I'm a producer. I'm a rapper. I'm a recent doctor, a PhD doctor, and I do some game sound design very recently. And anything else? Let's see. I'm a terrible chef. I'm trying to think of anything else that I can throw in there. That's a major attribute.
Hilarious, because we have our first chef that's going to be on the show next Friday.
Boom. I'm here. I'm already, it's penciled in because I need help. A girl needs help. I need resources. I need tools, tips, action items. Yes. Yeah. So those are my hyphens and my worries and woes that I need to work out.
But I love that though, right? Because I think when we think about creatives, a lot of people try to put creatives in like this weird box where creatives only can do one thing. They're only an actor. They're only a producer. They're only a rapper or, you know, they're only a chef. And I think that's it's so limiting to the fact that creativity comes out in so many different ways, right? Like, one of my clients right now is an amazing person. She's also a tax attorney and she's also a painter. And it's just like,
Yeah, we're complex. We're complex people. And I think a lot of it has to do with how we're socialized often as kids, like the educational system. So I used to be a third and fourth grade math and science teacher before I went to grad school. And I even think about my own childhood, that you're really, you're sort of trained to go down particular tracks very early. You know, very early they tell you, this is what you're good at, this is what you're bad at, these are your options, this is how you can be successful, this is how you're going to find yourself, you know, destitute and unsuccessful. And so you don't, I think increasingly young people are starting to see folks, examples of folks who are doing multiple things. I think of like Issa Rae or Donald Glover. You know, it's like, I don't care. I'm going to do the thing that I want to do. Now I want to drop an album. Now I want to be in a movie. Now, Rihanna, she's got Fenty. Like all of these people who are comfortable doing that. But I feel like when I was younger, it was like, you pick the thing and you do it. And that's kind of what your life has to be about. So it's difficult when you get older, when you're someone who has multiple interests, recognizing like, oh, I get to continue doing all of these things, like fully. I don't have to put one away so that the other one can thrive, you know, which it's difficult coming to that realization without kind of guides, people to help you through that.
Well, and I also think that there's this thing, because I remember, because back in the day, when I went to school, we used to have to take these aptitude tests every year, right?
Yeah.
And it used to be like, these are the things that you were interested in. And here are
Oh my God, I forgot about that. Yeah.
And mine used to be all over the place. I'd be like, so this says I could be an actor, and this says that I could be a lawyer. I don't know what to do.
Right. What is the intersection of these, you know?
Is there one?
Yeah.
And no one tells you it's a skill set, right? Like it's a skill set that can be reapplied in so many different places.
Yeah.
If you just learn what the nuances are of the technical part, right?
Yes.
And it's so interesting because we've had this conversation about you. I love the way that you look at the science of music. Like it is, and I have a really good friend, Carolyn Malachi, who I'm sure you know each other or. And Carolyn is the same way. Like I've known Carolyn for years, went on tour with her, Middle East came over. But when you really talk to her about the science of what she does and the study of what she does and the business of what she does, like it is more than just trying to get on a chart. It is truly, truly enjoying and knowing what music is. Mm-hmm. So like for you, like, do you just see like math and like notes like in the air? While you were working, is that what happens?
I wish, kind of like the A Beautiful Mind scenario where you got all everything swirling around. Unfortunately, not. I definitely come into it, I think, in the same way that like a kid goes to like a blank canvas. You know, you sit down and it's like, okay, time to relearn everything. Time to go through this process again. And I feel like I'm, now that I'm older, I'm more comfortable with the idea that every time you go to create something, it presents new challenges. That even as you develop and refine your skill set, it's still a challenge to make something come into being. And so I think you're right in the sense that there are certain like tried and true techniques or things that I can use to kind of shortcut the process or shortcut my like entry into the process. Like, okay, I know how I want my vocals to sound. I know how I want, you know, I know my favorite drum kits, et cetera, et cetera. But when it comes down to the creation, it's still like, okay, you got to sit down and make something. What's it going to be? It's still like struggling over the bits and pieces of it, which I know that you can kind of attest to in your own, you know, production, vast production knowledge of putting a thing together. It always requires you to be like on your toes, you know? So, and I think that's a good thing. I used to feel like, oh, you know, when am I going to feel like comfortable? Like I know exactly what I'm doing. And I think the more folks you talk to who are doing things at a high level, the more you realize, oh, they don't know what they're doing either, but they're just comfortable with not knowing what the hell they're doing.
I hear that comes with age.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. But I think that's really interesting too. And I think there's this other interesting conundrum that I love that we get to highlight that you are a producer and that you do work on your own beats and you do put together a lot of your own, well, all of your own arrangements. And I think it was funny because last time we chatted about, you know, folks asking like, so who did the track for you?
Yep.
And I remember having that same exact conversation with Jean Grey. And yes. And I remember going,
that's the thing.
It's her album. Her album. He was just on it. And you have these like weird situations where in this space that women are occupying more and more and more, I think because the accessibility, honestly, of being able to do it on your own, or you know, the connectivity of the internet, or God bless it, MySpace. Let's be real. MySpace was the first thing that brought a lot of us together.
Right.
That's where my art was at college. Kind of what has been your evolution into this space, and how do you feel like, particularly as a woman, particularly as a Black woman, particularly as a Black woman who is multi-hyphened with this vast background in literature, what do you feel like you love to bring to your music? Now, I hate when people are like, what do you feel like you bring to your music? Like, what do you feel like you want to, like what you love to bring to your music?
So I really liked what you were saying earlier about skill sets, that like, you know, when you're younger, those aptitude tests are like, these are the jobs for you. And they're not framing it in terms of like, these are the tools that you want to develop, or these are the things that the interests that make these seemingly disparate careers make sense in like one person. And so I think for me, what I've realized is that it's about trying to communicate effectively, like my lens, my experience of the world. And so that, you know, in working through a dissertation, that's what you're doing. Like you're doing it, you know, painstakingly over years and years and years.
You don't say. A PhD takes a lot of work.
I learned that. Yeah, the hard way, unfortunately. It takes a wee bit of time. But I also was definitely chilling when I was working on my PhD. I think I could have shaved off a year or two, but I was like, you know what? Here, let me write.
At your own time.
Exactly. On my own time, my own pace. But I think in the process of working on the dissertation, I realized like, okay, this is this process of trying to like really refine a point to its most essential component. That's what I'm trying to do with a song. Like I'm in trying to like break this big idea down into something manageable. That's what I'm trying to do with each song, with each bar, essentially. And I think I really like kind of playing with different styles of communication. And that's something that I hope to kind of bring to my music and bring to my academic writing, in the sense that I really don't like most academic writing. I think it is intentionally obscuring and inaccessible, often for the sake of being inaccessible, and can be very navel-gazy.
Well, it's smart for the sake of being smart, so that you sound smart saying things that you consider to be a smart thing with the theory that you're presenting.
Yeah, it's all about the presentation, right? And it's not about the audience, which is like, you know, not at all what education is supposed to be about. Like it's supposed to be 100% about kind of the conversation with other folks and bringing them in to that conversation you're trying to have. And so I think for my music writing, the way that that's influenced it is try to have this balance between being like clever and fun, you know, really trying to have something where it's like, oh yeah, you got to think to unpack this, but also having entry points or ways that people can access the music who might not, for example, get all of the references, or you know, might feel like they don't sort of have access to some of the really like dense bits and pieces that can be thrown into a song. So recognizing that balance and structuring a verse around trying to create spaces for people to come in and spaces where people have to sit and like really ponder over a thing has been something that I've learned in working on my dissertation that now I try to incorporate more into my music.
Word. So for me, I think it's interesting because a lot of your work, not your teaching, but a lot of your work kind of happens in the lab, and you haven't been able to go to the lab. Like, and for those who don't understand what I mean by lab, because You are a scientist. I mean the studio, not the lab. Yeah. Lab. How has the last couple weeks like shifted on your creativity side? Because I know you're now doing online classes, right?
Yeah, I've switched to remote teaching. This is actually my second to last week of classes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Congratulations to me. Congratulations to my students. Like, I know that this has been just an absolute trip for them trying to readjust. And I can't imagine what that would feel like. So yeah, it's been, I mean, in general, the way that I kind of produce and work is pretty like in home. My laptop is working. I work on my laptop and have like a little MIDI keyboard that I work with. And so it's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty DIY operation that I can move most places. And then I have a little mic in my closet that I use to kind of record scratch vocals. And then in general, I'll go to a studio. I have a friend of mine, Sosa, who has a studio in Queens, and I record with him, and we kind of have a nice collaborative relationship there. But in terms of just creative output, I have not created anything over the past few weeks. I have not written any new bars. I haven't written any new beats. I have just been in like processing mode. And you know, it's interesting. I'm thinking about the conversation we were having earlier about all of the different, like the kind of the ways that other people are
processing,
behaving in this moment. Yeah. And I'm definitely on the more like, let me fall back and like, conserve the energy, think about what's happening. And maybe in 2 or 3 months, maybe over the summer, it will like result in I'll have something to say about it. But for now, I feel like I can't even, just because things get more and more bizarre every day, I don't even feel like I have, you know?
Like, no, you don't say. Like,
it's true. It's true. It gets wilder and wilder.
Oh, well, and I think it also is one of those things where I was thinking about today because I saw this article that was saying drive-in movie theaters are thriving overseas. And I was like, I think people forget the historical context of why some things existed and why some things weren't seen as good investments. Yeah. Like if you were to say we were going to have theaters where people sat together and relaxed and ate food and leaned back during the Spanish flu.
Yeah.
I don't know if people would be like, yeah, that's a sound.
Right.
That's a sound investment, Mr. Johnson. Right. And or why certain things existed in a way, like the whole theory of a handshake, right? Or the theory of a greeting or, you know, I hope your family is well, being a greeting that people actually say to each other because it was a very intentional greeting.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting in this whole concept of processing and how are we looking at everything and how folks are there, because, you know, I've mentioned this a couple times in shows. The shows from week one versus the shows now from week five.
Oh gosh, I'm sure it's just like
so different, right? Because there was a sharp learning curve on even those people who wanted to be out there and producing, but a big, huge disparity gap, right? In technology knowledge, not because somebody wasn't like hip or somebody wasn't cool, they couldn't use their cell phone, but because that just wasn't their bailiwick at the time.
Right. Yeah. There's been a huge, I think even for me, just figuring out how to, like, what a day is, like, what is supposed to happen in a day? What do I want to have happen in a day? And structuring it in a way that feels sustainable, because I think it's like you said, week one, sustainability wasn't necessarily a part of the conversation. No one was, I wasn't projecting, you know, 3 or 4 weeks out, let alone 3 or 4 months. You know, I was just like, okay, this is new. This is different. This is weird. This is a developing story. And by week two, it was like, okay, the way that I've been approaching this, which is the way that I had been approaching it at the beginning, was to just like kiki it up with everybody all the time, just be kind of available, do my work and just never really take time to shut down and like read something or be off Twitter or whatever the thing was. But now it's like, okay, these, I have to put like the check marks, like I have to put the stuff in place that I can actually like all the boxes to make sure that I'm really staying sane. Cause it's easy to kind of get derailed or, you know, go down a dark space. I feel like a lot of friends of mine, especially this week, it's felt like have kind of entered into a really, really challenging, like existential kind of crisis mode. So, how are you feeling?
Today, for true, and this is kind of a preview so everybody knows, today is my first mental health day. This is the only thing I'm doing today, which is great. I would not want to talk to you. And then, you know, we've actually started to be reassessing. So we're going to hit episode 30 next week. And then we're going to start reassessing if we're doing this every single day. But guess what? Everyone will have 30 episodes, 30 podcasts, 30 live shows to look at, which, you know, is fantastic. Shout out to the production team. And I think I am definitely thinking about the idea of sustainability, right? Because I am one of those people that even before this, go, closer out the night before. How do we most efficiently plan for the entire week? When are groceries ordered? Like that was just the mentality, because when you got four different clients that you're working for and you're making everything work and figuring out how that is. But I think it's, you know, taking that step back and going, okay, yo, I got a book that I really wanted to work on and I still got to finish The Last of Us. By the way, where are you on the game?
Oh, I haven't done anything. You judge me. You will judge me. I'm like right at the beginning. We just, what's her name? She's like
Is Tess still there? Is Tess still?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So no spoilers. Okay. And you are very much at the beginning of the game. You were still trying to get out of the city. Okay.
Still trying to get out the city. Like I haven't done nothing, but I have big plans this weekend.
It's fine. You give me a call. You let me know. I'm past that. But if you were to ask someone who's played the game more than once, they'd be like, you still have to turn it off.
Or like, wait, where are you?
Why are you still playing? Last night it was probably like 1 a.m.
Yeah.
And I had fallen into like a bunch of clickers. And I was like, nah.
I just can't right now. Yeah, your brain will let you know when it's time.
My brain was like, no murdering zombies. You're done. So that's where I'm at.
Okay. I'm glad you're in a reassessment space. I'm glad you're taking a mental health day. That is so, so, so wonderful. I mean, like just hearing and hearing about all of the hats that you're wearing and were wearing before this, it can be so difficult to really plan that time in. Like you intellectually, you know, like, oh yeah, I need to rest. I need to do these things, but it just
things go by so fast.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even know how right now it's 3:22. When did that happen? I'm so confused.
Woke up and now it's like, oh, the sun is setting. Okay.
So I actually gotta take this is what I'm doing today. I'm taking my new lens out for a stroll. In a couple of suburbs. Oh yeah. No, but I mean, I think you make a really valid point of allowing ourselves to reassess so that we can have that space. And I don't think a lot of us, particularly of this generation, were programmed that way.
No, we were not. Burnout is a real thing. And I think the assessment, what I'm realizing is that the assessment can happen on a daily basis. Like I used to think about it in terms of these kind of like, okay, at the end of the semester, I'm going to sit down and figure out like, what do I want to do for the summer? Or like, what did I, you know, like the big projects, but it actually in a kind of crisis moment like this, it has to be on a day-to-day basis and sometimes on an hourly basis, just like, okay, how do I want to get through this next hour and be okay? You know? And I think that for me has been the revelation. I, I saw this quote. There's a really wonderful website called The Creative Independent, and they publish all kinds of interviews with with like artists and thinkers and like fashion folks, just any kind of creative person under the sun. And I get their little daily, they send like a daily interview basically. And one of the interviews was, I'm forgetting what her profession was, but she said that one of the tenets of folks who are entering into sobriety is this idea that you can resume prayer. And the idea there is that if you fall off or you're not able to, kind of religious folks who use this ideology is that, you know, if you mess up, you just start your prayer again. Like, it's okay. Like, you don't have to have, it doesn't, things don't have to be perfect for you to kind of pick up where you left off. And I think I, as a product, I think out of this generation, there are myriad issues that go into us having this sense of like, I always have to be on, I always have to be working, I have to be perfect, I can't mess up. Like, the layers are, and being Black women doing this, I think there's an added layer of like, there's no room for failure. You got to be, you know, right. You got to be tip top perfect, all your I's dotted, all your T's crossed, all the freaking time. And so that translates into our, you know, personal lives and in other spaces where we're not giving ourselves the freedom to like, oh, I said I was going to work out today and I didn't work out. That doesn't make me a bad person. It means I messed up today, maybe, and then tomorrow I'll try again. Like, I'll resume. Your body
was like, sit down.
Exactly. Maybe your body was like, this is not the time. You don't need that right now. What you need to do is take your behind to sleep.
Exactly. And actually, a great example of that. I was clocking 10 miles a week. Guys, I have to work out.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I was clocking 10 miles a week. You know, I've got an amazing nerdy trainer. Shout out to Keep Girl Strong, who's been doing Skype calls.
I love Keep Girl Strong. Yes!
Robin, Robin is amazing. So Robin's my personal trainer. She's been keeping me together because I have back issues from running too many half marathons and too many races. So I did something. I went too fast, did a mile too quick, trying to fit something in, jacked up my back. And this week I assessed myself. So you know what? You have to move around. So you get to power walk. You get to power walk for an entire week. And guess what? You're still going to get 6 miles in. It's not 10, but guess what? You're going to power walk. This is what we're going to do. And when your back is hurting, you're going to sit down. Right? Just as my sis who just said, shout out to my bar partner, shout out to my study partner from law school, Monique Ray, burnout is real. And she got three kids.
Whew, I like felt the secondhand burnout. I received it. Oh my goodness. Yes. Oh, but it's a real phenomenon.
Oh, so we have a question. Hey, Matt, I adore your work. Thank you for everything you do. My question is about songwriting. Do you find it harder to create nerdy tracks based on existing properties or extremely vulnerable personal songs?
Ooh, that's a very good question.
Or like, you're like saying America versus Mario Kart? Is that what you're...
I think so. Yeah. I think it can be... They can both be equally challenging in the sense that I think when you're creating a song based on an existing property, you're in some ways beholden to an audience that already exists around that. And so it's like this dance of trying to honor, you know, the folks who love this game or love this like character or whatever the thing is, and also trying to put your unique spin on it. So I feel like I've been able to not be as worried about that now. I used to be really, really stressed out about that. And that is tied not only to just like kind of creative anxieties, but also, you know, being a Black woman in geek space, I think there is, you know, understandable fears about how people will react to, like, for example, me taking on the space of Samus, you know, like that there could be very real retaliation in a lot of different ways for that. So I think that that's one set of anxieties. But with the extremely vulnerable personal songs, in general, I think I said this in my last conversation with Angelique, that I cry a lot. So it's kind of easy for me to just be in that space. Like I'm in my feelings all the time, you know, Pisces gang, like waterworks all day, every day. But as far as, so like the writing of it is easy. I think the presenting of it can be difficult because I know that after the fact, it's going to mean that part of me is exposed or that those conversations are conversations I'm going to end up having for a long time. So like the song that I think many folks know me for is a song called 1080p about kind of working through my depression while in grad school. And it's been a really powerful song to have out there, but it's also meant having kind of really difficult conversations often with folks. So I've recognized that when I put myself out there, that a necessary or a responsibility that I then take on as an artist is like following up with people or continuing to have those conversations. So that was a very unsatisfactory answer, but both are difficult. But in general, since I'm already in my feelings, I think it's easier to write the kind of like very, very personal, vulnerable songs.
Well, and I think that's a really interesting because I think folks, it's such a different situation when you are writing from that space, right?
Yeah.
And I think the writing process, I've always joked, and my brother-in-law is very, he's a huge music head. And, you know, we've had these conversations about why someone's sophomore album sometimes is either the best thing they've ever done or the worst thing they've ever done. It's never really in the middle, right? It's either they've gotten the formula down, they saved these 12 tracks from the freshman album because they wanted to get it right, or they had more time left, whatever it was, or it was just bad because they used everything they had on the first album.
Exactly.
And that's because there's this space of coming from vulnerable. Like, God bless Lauryn Hill, but y'all, she has one album.
Lauryn. She put Lauryn- it all into this like one space.
And then she did an acoustic version of that one album. And I'm not mad. Look, it is one of the most culturally significant albums, period. Not of a generation, just period.
All time.
Look, this is why Lauryn still gets invited to perform places, even though
it's pretty incredible. Yeah, no, it really is incredible to think of putting out an album and then having a sort of 20, you know, 25 year lifespan for that. But it speaks to exactly you're saying, that you can pour everything into that and simply not have any more to give after that. So it's definitely a balance, I think, with trying to figure that out. And the other part of it is, the other part of balancing that out is that it can be dangerous to write only from a place of pain, in the sense that A, people begin to feel like that's what you do and they have a preference for that. So I think of folks like Mary J. Blige, who people have been like, oh, I only like her music when she was like really messed up, you know, or when she was really going through it. But when she got happy,
every breakup song ever of my entire career came from Mary J. Blige. That was it.
Like, exactly. They know how to speak.
Mary J was when you were really sad and it just happened. And Erica was when you were like, no, I'm not going to, no.
I'm ascending, right? Exactly. They become these like patron saints for these particular moments. And I think as an artist, that can be really hard. That can be a lot of pressure, but also just a really hard space to be in. Like if it's the thing that I'm trying to figure out right now, or I think, you know, once I get back into being able to write and think creatively, is how to write. And it seems crazy to say this now, but how to write from a place of joy, like what it means to try to write about the things that I love in as rich a way that I feel like I can talk about the things that piss me off or the things that make me sad, the things that hurt me. I feel like I and a lot of other artists have a really well-developed language for talking about pain, but talking about joy can risks being corny or like overly sentimental. And so I think people are scared to go into that space. And you know, it's a challenge, but I think it can be healthy to be able to develop that part of ourselves too, especially when all we hear is like gloom and doom right now.
Well, I think that's, so it's funny. So I have like a track of my favorite songs, which is like Sunny.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Polka Dots, Checks and Stripes. If you've ever heard that song, it's by the same people who did the elephant song, Skimmarinky Dinky
Dink. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
I ever saw a black girl in a video and she wanted to wear Polka Dots, Checks and Stripes. And so she did. And then Starfish and Coffee, right? Like all these like really corny, but very joyful songs. And it's just that you need that, right? Yeah. Or like a song like Last Night a DJ Saved My Life. Yo, I needed that song. There's not that many lyrics in that song. It wasn't that complicated of a song, but it was one of those songs that you knew you could listen to.
Yes.
We really needed it. And I think people underestimate the joy in the corniness. Like, that's why Drake does so well. Look, I love Drake. Drake has convinced himself that he is a hard rapper. And I am very excited because in that convincing, he has embraced his corny and he gives us that.
Yeah. It's all there. It's all there. All the cornball tees that we could possibly need is right there. Yeah. And I'm glad that he's embracing that because the corniness is part, I think it's fun to see an artist corny. It's a part of vulnerability. I think being able to be corny or express your corniness, like it's an acknowledgement of your humanity. Like
sweet like him. Sweet right. Like him.
Exactly. You get it. You know, you already know.
So I mean, do you feel like from your perspective, right now in kind of the place we are in that, and I know how I feel, but that creativity and art has its role in what is happening at this moment.
Yes, absolutely. I think in particular, we talked a little bit about this last time, but I think kind of folks who are doing Afrofuturist work really have something to say in this space, because I think a lot about this amazing artist, Kameh Ayewa, who also goes by the name Moor Mother, M-O-O-R Mother. You know, she draws on Sun Ra in saying, you know, the end of the world has already happened. We're already on the other side of the apocalypse. And I think that the way that her framing of that is that means that now we get to create something different. And so in thinking about what's happening in this moment, it's terrifying and it's revealing all of these structural injustices that many of us already knew existed. But, you know, a lot of people, it's their first time really confronting the like precarity of how most of us are living. And it's this space where now you see collective action, like really, really forcing big companies to kind of bend to the will of working folks because they have to, because that is the constraint of the moment. So in thinking about that like Afrofuturist idea that we get to shape this new reality, I see spaces where we're recognizing again how much power we have, how important our voices are, that we get to create the future that's in front of us. And it's going to be really effing hard because there are a lot of very evil people with a lot of money and a lot of power, but there's so much more of us, so many more of us to be able to do that. And we already have seen us bring things to our knees when we needed to. So yeah, I think that's been inspiring me as far as when I go back to the creative space in thinking about joy and thinking about what our work can do. It can present or project like a possibility for a future in a moment where it feels like it's all dissolving, it's all going away. Like even this conversation that we're having, the fact that you've been able to mobilize these conversations, is it speaks to like a future space existing, that like these are resources or tools and part of a longer and ongoing conversation. It's like, that's what we need in the moment, is folks who are reminding us that there's like tomorrow and there's going to be another day and another day after that, you know, because it feels in the day to day, like that's how can tomorrow exist? You know, like today was hard enough. So yeah, I think that's the space that art has filled for me, just like creating hope for me.
I love it. Okay, so we have a question, which I think kind of goes into this, but do you have strategies for convincing, allowing, for lack of a better term, yourself to be vulnerable and imperfect in the face of the demanding public eye and hyper visibility? Ooh, talk about a question. I feel like you just asked, do you walk around with a hype man?
Do you have strategies for convincing / allowing yourself to be vulnerable and imperfect in the face of the demanding public eye and hyper visibility? That's so, so fabulous. I think I do that at home. I think one space that I've started to work that out is I've been writing little poems that aren't really for anybody. And they're, you know, they're pretty silly and short, but like creating a separate creative space has been nice because it's one that's outside of anyone's judgment. Like no one knows that these things exist. And like, I haven't studied poetry or I'd written rap songs, but not sort of focused on specific kind of forms in the way that I'm writing right now. And I think the judgment free, like the fact of it being judgment free allows me to feel like I can use the wrong word and no one's going to say anything and no one's going to know, you know, like I get to mess up here. So it's like you have to create those spaces through like hobbies or things that your income is not like reliant on. I think that that's the challenge, is that when you're like the thing that you love is also attached to how you support yourself, it can be really hard to allow space for imperfection or space for like messing up or not doing the right thing. So creating spaces that are completely removed from like financial well-being or like public approval, that's the way that I've been able to try to keep, you know, keep myself sane, because for the most part, it's been really tough. I think, yeah. Thank you for the question.
That was a dope question. So as we kind of wind down, mm-hmm. I love asking like two real questions. I haven't had a chance to ask them this week, because I feel like this week has been a blur. Yeah. Question number one, like right now for you, what's keeping you grounded?
What's keeping me grounded? So my husband's really great. He's really chill. He's a really chill person. Like I said, I'm always in my feelings. Like I'll see a cute, you know, kitten in a commercial and it's like tears, or I'll see, you know, see a heartbreaking story. And just, so I'm really, really expressive and emotive. And I feel like, you know, he has very like calm level energy, which is nice and matches my sort of like kind of emotional space that I'm in. So that's been good. And I think snacks.
Work.
Snacks have been keeping me very grounded.
Super important.
Just crunching on something. It's like, oh, I'm stressing. Okay, let me just have, you know, grab some almonds or some popcorn or whatever. That has really done a lot to just chill me out when I'm feeling like I can't manage. So snacks and husband and taking naps.
I feel like these are all solid strategies. Also, yes, snacks, Buddha chocolate. And red wine are my two favorite things.
Ooh, in the world. Just had red wine this afternoon. It was so wonderful.
Every single look, and I have to shout this out, Hannibal. We see you. Hat tip to the chill, calm husband and snacks.
yes,
I love it. So, and I think the other question that I love asking, because I want people to remember that it is possible. How are you finding joy right now? Besides snacks.
Yeah.
Because snacks are joy. And so is red wine.
I think, yes, those are definitely all spaces of joy. I feel like I have been finding joy. That's a really, really good question. On a day-to-day basis, one of the ways I've been finding joy is going on Spotify and listening to an album that I have been wanting to listen to, or wanting to kind of like just sit back and engage with, but felt like, you know, I hadn't had time, or, you know, it was just on a list, long list of to-do items that I was never going to get to. But like really taking the time and just saying, okay, for this hour, I'm going to sit and listen to, like, today I was listening to Nirvana's first album, Bleach. And I was like, I'm just going to do that today. That's what's going to happen. And doing that felt really good. It was like, okay, that was, I did it. I wanted to do this and I did it. And that's been really special to me. And the other thing that's been giving me a lot of joy is, there's so many things, so I wanna like pick the best thing, is probably just having conversations with friends that I haven't connected with in a long time. Like, you know, we don't have to talk all the time. I think everybody's pretty burned out on Zoom. So like the weekly happy hour situation, that's not really doing it right now with me. But when I'm able, like this past week, I had a FaceTime chat with like four friends from undergrad, and we just like laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed about the most foolish talking about who we were in college and why we made the choices we made. And that was so special, and I was able to like zone out for that moment. So yeah, I think reconnecting with old friends has been big, and then visiting albums that I never thought that I had time to listen to before that now I have more time for.
That's real. That was me and Garbage yesterday. So a lot of people don't realize that very much into everything. Yeah. Garbman, that album, the first one.
I need to put that on my to-do list, actually. I loved Garbage. I'm throwing that on.
So much emotion. So I wanted to shout this out before we go. Not a question, but I saw your performance at MAGFest this year, and it was life-changing.
Wow.
I can tell you put your heart into the performance, and it made me feel so many wonderful emotions. I just want to share that with you because it was a joyful moment.
Oh, my God. Thank you so, so much for sharing that. That performance was such a joyful thing. That's one of my favorite audiences, because people aren't afraid to be corny and aren't afraid to give love and just be present. So it allows me to do that as an artist.
Oh man. So I want to thank you so much
thank for spending you.
This amazing 45 minutes with us. This is a perfect mellow way. I think everybody should now go get chocolate, wine, take a nap,
please.
Your album from like the 90s, if you were alive. That you want to listen to again, or just pick an album from the 90s. Tragic Kingdom, also
yes,
great.
Yes. I just shouted that out in my class like 2 weeks ago. So yes.
But you also, I remember I was listening to song. I was listening to a song the other day, and I can't remember the track of it, but there you use
I did Spiderwebs. The chorus of Spiderwebs is like my favorite thing ever. And so I put that on a track called Comments Disabled. Yeah.
Best choruses ever.
It's so good.
But thank you so much. Happy Friday, everybody. We'll be back on Monday with Angel Parker. So if you're a fan of The Runaways, if you're a fan, I mean, she also has like a huge long list of IMDb amazingness. She'll be coming, hitting us up on Monday with some more Black Girl Magic. But I want to say thank you again to Sam. And treat yourself well, everyone. Treat yourself well.
Creative Quarantine is hosted by Angelique Roche. It's produced by Angelique Roche, Sarah Storm, and Matt Storm. Our logo is designed by Aaron Leffler. New streaming episodes are available Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, and Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on AngeliqueRoche.com/creativequarantine. Podcasts are made available the morning after each live streamed episode, wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and visit us on Instagram at creative.quarantine and Twitter at creativeqtine. Please send this to a friend who needs a little artistic company, and stay at home if you possibly can. We'll see you soon.
Have you ever wondered how your favorite performer actually feels? Well, here's your chance. Welcome to The Quiet Part Out Loud with me, Bobby Steggert, Broadway actor, and now a therapist to a whole host of Broadway creatives. Part interview, part therapy, this is not your typical podcast. We'll go right to the heart of things with some of your favorite artists, what they still struggle with, what lessons they've learned, what they haven't figured out yet. There's enormous power in saying the quiet part out loud. Are you listening?
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.